This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always in the early portion of the week by Adam Burke. It is a unique week, Thanksgiving. We will have just two pods this week. No podcast on Tuesday, but we still will break down the loaded Week 14 card on Wednesday. But a lot to dive into, Mr. Burke, this week. Not the craziest weekend. All 14 of the top 14 teams did win. Utah made it very interesting as they were able to pull the crazy comeback over Kansas State, and our colleague Stormy got quite the game there on the sidelines. But I think as we head into rivalry weekend, we certainly could see some weird and wacky stuff. I'll start with the elephant in the room. You're an Ohio State fan. Are the Buckeyes finally going to do it? Slay the Dragon as a 11.5, 12.5 point favorite. Actually, the numbers come down a little bit, down to 10 against Michigan.
Well, I hope so. I will say, and maybe this is just me kind of reaching a little bit, but there were a lot of instances over the last 4 years where it felt like Ryan Day wasn't ready for the moment, right? Like, they were either way too conservative or, you know, Day was playing scared with a lead or something like that. It sort of feels like a page turned for Day and the program with going through the college football playoff the way that they did after losing to Michigan, finding a way to rally, getting in the playoff, and then just kind of, you know, steamrolling everybody for the most part up until Notre Dame played them tough in the championship game. It felt like that was just kind of a giant turning point to where I don't think Dave feels intimidated anymore by this game. I feel like he was because of how Ohio State had done under Urban Meyer and under Jim Tressel as well. And I just felt a lot of pressure to uphold that standard. And I think sometimes he got too cute. He kind of overthought himself. I think last year something just changed. A switch just flipped in him. And I think they win the game. I don't know if they cover, but I do think that, you know, with how dominant their defense is, there's no reason for them to lose this football game.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I certainly didn't think they would lose last year, and Maybe that is the eye-opening factor for game.
Do they lose if Will Howard's not concussed? I know he played, but, like, he had no idea where he was throwing the football for most of that game.
Well, also, I don't envision Brian Hartline running, 20 consecutive or 20? It felt like 20 consecutive runs up the middle against a stout defensive front. I mean, Chip Kelly, who, by the way, was just fired yesterday as the highest paid offensive coordinator in the NFL, did not have the best game plan, I would say, a year ago against Michigan. But, you know, that's one of a ton of games that are going to be pretty intriguing heading into this weekend, as it always is. And, you know, what are the games on upset alert? You know, I'll start on Friday. Ole Miss right now, I don't envision the committee knocking them. Maybe Oregon jumps them because of their win against USC. But this whole Lane Kiffin situation, it feels like he's good as gone. And you think back to a couple years ago, albeit with a 4-team playoff versus a 12-team playoff, and how the committee docked Florida State for losing Jordan Travis. How does Ole Miss get docked if Lane Kiffin does, in fact, bolt after their game on Friday? And also, is Mississippi State going to be that trendy dog this week because of all of the smoke regarding Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a couple of fair questions, right? Because, you know, I mean, Mississippi State just as a program, you know, a lot of it under Dan Mullen, they were a program that just, in games like this, they kind of showed up, right? There was always some team that they beat that they weren't supposed to, something like that. Maybe that kind of spirit lives on through Jeff Lebby. But, yeah, I mean, the Kiffin thing, I know everyone thinks he's probably gone. I don't know. I kind of feel like, I mean, LSU's obviously, you know, if the reported commitment is true, they're throwing a lot of money at him and a lot of money at the roster, which is definitely very enticing. But I don't know, man. It feels kind of Kiffin now at this stage of his career, at this stage of his life, to just leave everybody hanging in limbo and then go, yeah, I'm staying. Like, I'm not convinced he's going. I'm really not. I think he loves the drama and he loves the attention. And I'm sure, you know, obviously we heard the reported offer from LSU. I'm sure the Ole Miss athletic department has also gone to him and been like, look, like, we can give you a bump, but, you know, I mean, we can give your program a bump and get you a lot more resources. So I don't think he's going to go, personally.
Ooh, I think that's kind of a hot take.
I think so, too.
I think he's gone. I don't know. And it certainly seems like it's LSU over Florida. That's where the smoke is right now. I wanted to bet Mississippi State, and I don't know if I'm going to get there on this one. It feels like this game is everybody's going to be telling, you know, their uncle at Thanksgiving dinner, hey, you hear about Lane Kiffin? They're not going to be focused, and Mississippi State's going to be capable. Well, I'll say this about Mississippi State. Their defense is horrific, and we saw that 2 weeks ago when Ahmad Hardy ran for 300 against them. And, you know, I'm not knocking Ahmad Hardy, but he was able to get, what, 50 and change against Oklahoma. Granted, Oklahoma, a very stout front that they have. Trinidad Chambliss went to Twitter earlier on Monday. He said, to our fans, this team is completely locked in, living in the moment, and we're staying true to our 1-0 mindset for the Egg Bowl and future games. We're unbothered by anything about next year and fully trusting Coach Kiffin's leadership to keep us moving forward with our goals. I don't know. If there's any coach, to your point, that would full on just say, yeah, just kidding, we were messing with you guys the whole week, and he stays, and he told, you know, could I feel like you can envision him almost doing a Jordan Belfort live on the field, you know, after the game saying, mm-hmm. I'm not leaving. So we'll see. I mean, the drama that is Lane Kiffin never ceases to amaze you. So I do think he's gone. But as of right now, the game that I thought I initially would be on, taking the home dog, I think I'm going to hold off on the home Bulldogs, even though I do any chance want to say I got to have more cowbell.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, and it's, I mean, do we get an indication of, I mean, has Kiffin told his team, has he let them know, you know, like, has he kind of let them know what his thought process is? And do we see an indication right away? If Ole Miss comes out super fired up and it's 14-0, 17-0 after the first quarter, like, is that a sign that he's staying? Or, you know, I mean, does he not tell them anything because he is actually leaving? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's such a really, really weird thing. And, you know, I mean, I also think that to make the announcement on Saturday when there's all of these other games that are going on, and you see Lane, like, tweeting assistant coaches, you know, he was messing with Rhett Lashley because he was recruiting in the Dallas area, you know, all these different types of things. Like, part of me feels like Lane doesn't want to take away from what Saturday is during rivalry week for it to be this earth-shattering news of him going to LSU. So I could be very, very wrong, but I don't know. I think he respects kind of the tradition of what college football is. And I think the takeaway from that last day of the regular season to, you know, go to LSU, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's in his character to me, at least not with how he, you know, conducts himself now.
Also, speaking of the tradition of Lane Kiffin, did you see that Portland State's head coach got fired on the tarmac this weekend?
Yep.
Yeah. So we had another firing on the tarmac. So Lane Kiffin, he's always been a trendsetter,
That's true.
The way he gets fired. So
that's very, very true.
Well, speaking of Friday, the Friday slate is very good. It has the Egg Bowl, which, you know, traditionally I would love that game to be on Thanksgiving, but college football and ESPN said, you know what? Probably not smart to go up against the triple header of the NFL. So Navy and Memphis will get the Thursday night Thanksgiving menu there. But Texas A&M and Texas, man, you know, you look at Texas A&M, the last time we saw them play a, you know, living, breathing entity was South Carolina, and they were down 30-3 at halftime. And A&M, only a 2.5-point favorite on the road at Texas. Looking at, you know, the look-ahead line, it was 2.5, hasn't moved. if Texas beats Texas A&M, obviously it would not affect A&M's chances to make the playoff. They are a lock to make the playoff. But what it would do, number one, it would bring up the discussion of, does Texas with three losses get in? I think probably not, but that would be a discussion. And then also, Adam, it would make for an Alabama versus Georgia rematch in the SEC championship game, which would be pretty intriguing for a lot of us from a college football playoff standpoint. So Georgia right now, I mean, they've got a chance, Adam, to potentially move up to the two seed if things break their way. If they beat Georgia Tech and then Texas beats Texas A&M, there's a chance Georgia, like last year, could end up as the two seed.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I mean, I don't know what the hell Georgia Tech was doing last week.
Being Georgia Tech.
That was ugly against Pitt. Very, very ugly. Look, I mean, I already played Texas plus 2.5. I already played the money line. You know, Arch Manning, actually of late here, 12-2 touchdown interception ratio dating back to the Red River rivalry game. And, you know, he was so bad early on, and we all kind of picked on him for the Florida game and all of that. But Steve Sarkisian actually has this guy kind of going in a different direction here. I mean, yeah, there are still some sacks. He got sacked 5 times by Mississippi State, but like, he's playing so much better than he was early on in the season. And we know that Texas is going to have a good defense. So I just think that, you know, we kind of all, to some degree, dismissed Texas, you know, after that second loss, after that loss to Florida. And we're like, well, Arch Manning sucks. He's not the guy. Like, this team's not really going anywhere. And I know that the results aren't impressive with a couple of overtime wins, 3-point win over Vanderbilt, all of that. But this team is playing better. And I sort of feel like Texas A&M is not. I feel like they're not getting better as the season goes along. So I like Texas here. I think Texas wins, and I think they could do kind of shake some things up in the SEC there.
Yeah, it certainly feels like that point spread is telling you that Texas is the right side here. And, you know, I'm going to pull it up right now here live on the air and see what it was. And look, lots have changed. So using this as a, hey, this side is the right side. But it is kind of fun to look back at the game of the year lines and what they were, you know, Texas A&M. So preseason, this game was Texas minus 11.5. So yeah, this certainly changed a lot in this one. So yeah, I'm with
and
you.
Look, I think Texas, I mean, I think, you know, you're right to say that Texas A&M is a lock for the playoff. Like, at this point, they're not going to fall out, but outside of the 1-point win at Notre Dame, right? I know they've won every game, right? So you got to give them credit for that, especially in the SEC. But LSU's become a complete shit show. Missouri didn't have Bo Prabula in that game. They should have lost to South Carolina, but you know, Shane Beamer there aren't enough words I could use to describe that as somebody who kind of married into South Carolina fandom. Florida's not any good. Arkansas has no defense whatsoever. Like, the body of work for Texas A&M is not strikingly impressive at all whatsoever for a team that is undefeated. You know, in terms of SEC strength of schedules, they got pretty fortunate here, right? No Alabama, no Georgia, no Ole Miss. You know, now they finally get Texas. Like, I will say this. If Texas A&M does beat Texas here, I would be looking to fade them in the playoff. You know, depending on who wins whatever, you know, first round game they would run into after the bye, assuming they win the SEC, of course. But I'd look to fade them in the SEC championship game, almost regardless of who they play. I don't think this Texas A&M team is as good as their record and as their ranking would indicate.
Well, here's a pretty fun question to ponder. So Georgia, once again, they're done 7-1 in the SEC. They have the head-to-head loss to Alabama. Alabama has to take care of business against Auburn, which we've seen no matter what the coaching situation is, Auburn can be a little bit feisty there at home. You think back to a couple of years ago. But for argument's sake, let's assume Alabama wins against Auburn. If you're Alabama and you're sitting there at number 10 in a weird spot, I don't think they should be 10, but that's where the committee put them. They're at number 10 behind Notre Dame, despite their resume. If you're Alabama, Would you rather play Georgia or would you rather play A&M? I think the answer is pretty obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd much rather play A&M without a doubt. I mean,
Georgia's playing right now, I think, you know, we can get into this, you know, and look at your power ratings. I was texting and he put it out on Twitter, our buddy Brad Powers. He put Notre Dame at number two right now, the way that Notre Dame is playing. I think in some order, you've got Ohio State, Indiana, Notre Dame. And then I think Georgia's kind of creeping up from a power rating standpoint, the way that they've been playing as of lately. So, yeah, if you're Alabama, especially because that SEC championship game takes place in Atlanta, I think you'd much rather play take Texas A&M than Georgia for a play for a chance to get into the playoff.
Yeah, and especially because, you know, when you look at the game between Alabama and Georgia, like Alabama came out pretty hot, right? I mean, they had two long drives. They were up 14-0. They ultimately won the game, but I thought Georgia was the better team from the middle of the second quarter on. And I thought it was pretty clear that Georgia was the better team, you know, over the last, you know, two-thirds-ish of that game. So, yeah, I'd much rather play Texas A&M. You know, I mean, I know Marcel Reed can do a lot of things. He's a mobile guy, stuff like that. But, yeah, give me Texas A&M. And look, I mean, I have Texas A&M fourth in my power ratings. I have Alabama sixth and Georgia seventh. Probably could shift that around if I wanted to. But, again, it's been one of those things where, you know, much like looking at Indiana or Ohio State, who I have, you know, Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, because of the schedules that they've played, like you have to take into account the fact that you need to rate them very highly because they're going to be a big favorite in the games that they play. So you kind of give them the respect for that, whereas Alabama and Georgia have played, you know, some games with tighter point spreads. So that kind of just inherently sort of suppresses what their, you know, power rating upside can be, in my opinion. But if you were to make all things equal and Texas A&M was to play Georgia's schedule or Alabama's schedule, something like that, not only do they probably have two losses, but they would probably be towards the back part of the top 10 for me from a power rating standpoint. So it's almost kind of a rubber meets the road type of deal where, you know, this week they play a good Texas team, and then if they win that, we'll see what they do in the SEC championship game, but I'll be looking to bet against them.
Yep, that's a big one. Friday night down in Austin, and I haven't bet it yet, but I certainly will be looking more towards the Longhorns in that spot. You know, I actually mentioned our buddy Brad Powers. He tweeted out Jeff Sagarin's top 10, which he has Ohio State 1, Notre Dame 2, Oregon 3, Indiana 4, Georgia 5, and then A&M coming in at number 6. So, yeah, it's that could really jumpstart a pretty wacky weekend. And speaking of Friday, we'll circle back to this game and the scenario in the Mountain West, because the Mountain West, they don't have any say in the college football playoff this year like they did last year, but there's a chance we could have a cluster in that conference come Friday if San Diego State loses at New Mexico. But, you know, with the SEC and everything kind of playing out the way that it has been, I am curious your thoughts right now on the Heisman Trophy, because this past weekend, Julian Sain, his numbers were rather pedestrian. He also didn't have his best players out there in Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, and he has dropped a decent amount. So Julian Sain's numbers this weekend, 13 of 19, two touchdown passes, 157 yards against Rutgers, no Tate, no Smith. Right now, and I'm using DraftKings, the Heisman board is Mendoza minus 115. Jeremiah Love is up to plus 350. Julian Sain 5-1. Diego Pavia plus 550. And Marcel Reed at 14-1. Now you look at what's on tap this weekend. Pavia and Vanderbilt go to Tennessee. He is playing exceptional football right now. Marcel Reed, as we talked about, he and Texas A&M go to Texas. Notre Dame plays late night, the Stormy Special against Stanford. They should win by many, many points. They're a 33.5-point favorite. And then you've got the Mendoza-Sain situation, which seems likely that those two will meet in the Big Ten championship. How would you handicap the Heisman field right now? Because I'll be honest, it is very murky, because Mendoza probably should be the favorite, but it's not like his numbers are very gaudy. And I think a number of people, Adam, have pointed out, you know, this year's Heisman Trophy winner is not going to be your typical Heisman Trophy winner with 45 touchdown passes to three interceptions or anything like that. So I don't know if it's as clear cut as Mendoza versus Saiyan is going to be your Heisman Trophy off in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm really curious to see how the voters handle this whole situation, right? Because again, as you mentioned, if you look historically at this award and the quarterbacks who have won it, so outside of Lamar Jackson, right, who had 30 passing touchdowns, but he also was a guy who just ran all over the field, legitimate, true dual threat quarterback. The last guy to not have 40 passing touchdowns and win the award was Johnny Manziel back in 2012. So you're talking about Jaden Daniels had 40 last year, Caleb Williams 42 and 22, Bryce Young 47 and 21. You know, Devontae Smith won it during the COVID year in 2020. Joe Burrow had 60 passing touchdowns in 2019. Absurd. Kyler 42, Baker 43. Like, nobody's remotely close to that this season at the quarterback position. So can you, as a voter, right, if you put that into that context, you can go, well, none of these guys really fit the benchmarks, right? And it's not Julian Sayin's fault because Ohio State wins every game by a ton. And the last few weeks, they've been trying to really establish their identity of running the football because they couldn't do it. Remember, what was it, 4 weeks ago, something like that? I talked about how Julian Sayin was out there throwing 40 times a game because Ohio State didn't like their running game. So what did Ryan Day and Brian Hartline do? Well, they've spent the last 3 weeks forcing the running game so that they can make sure that they have one and figure it out. So it's not Julian Sayin's fault that he hasn't been able to put up numbers. It's just the nature of Ohio State doing what they've done. Similarly, same thing for Fernando Mendoza, right? I mean, his brothers relieved him a few times here to come in and play garbage time. Indiana's just a ridiculously dominant team. So, you know, what are you going to do? Notre Dame's a very dominant team too, outside of, you know, their two losses, their two close losses. But we're getting to the point where at least Jeremiah Love's numbers are pretty comparable to what we've seen from running backs who have won the award in the past. Now, he's not running for 2,200 yards like Derrick Henry did, but, you know, kind of Mark Ingram, right? 1658, 17 touchdowns. Love's probably going to wind up in that sort of range where he probably runs for two Bills against Stanford if they want him to. Probably has three more rushing touchdowns to get to 20. Like, that's at least comparable to what we've seen. I think Jeremiah Love should win it. I don't think that he will, but I think he should because, again, these quarterbacks that we have this year, they're just not on par with other guys who have won the award.
I don't know who's going to win it, and I know that's a great take for a college football betting podcast right now. I think Mendoza, as I mentioned, should be the favorite, and I think he probably will win it, but, you know, let's play the likely scenario. Indiana loses to Ohio State. And what if the most dominant defense in college football makes him look pedestrian? Does that open up the door for someone who's not playing that weekend? Let's play out a very likely scenario, okay? Texas A&M loses to Texas. Is Marcel Reed out if that happens?
Yes.
Okay. So we remove him. Just in this scenario, once again, point spread's 2.5. If they beat Texas, Marcel Reed very live for the Heisman Trophy because they would be playing in the SEC Championship. So we remove him from the conversation if that plays out. Notre Dame, you know, knock on wood, I don't think they're going to lose this weekend to Stanford, just going on a limb as a 33-point favorite, and they've won every game by double digits since losing to Texas A&M mid-September. If Fernando Mendoza and company lose to, I guess the question would be this. Can Fernando Mendoza do what Caleb Williams and Lamar Jackson did a couple years back, which is, can they run up the score and run up his separation from the field enough that the Big Ten championship won't matter? Because you remember, Caleb Williams had that really good game against Notre Dame to close out the regular season, and he essentially locked up the Heisman, and losing to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship when he was a little bit banged up didn't really hurt him. Or are his numbers not that gaudy, and you look at a Diego Pavia. Let's look at Diego Pavia, because I think what you said about Jeremiah Love is fair. I think he's the most talented and most electrifying player, at least offensively, in college football this year. But I also can make an argument, Adam, that the most valuable player in college football very well could be Diego Pavia. And I know we've obviously had our fun with Diego Pavia, with his, excelling against the spread and whatnot. But he's had really one bad game on the road at Bama. His numbers ended up being pretty good against Texas, and they had a chance late to get back into that game. He ended up with 3 touchdowns, 26 over 6 touchdowns to interceptions, 8 rushing touchdowns. If he goes on the road and they beat Tennessee, they probably still won't be a playoff team, but by the nature of the award, couldn't you make a strong case that Diego Pavia should win the Heisman Trophy just for his meaning to that program? I'm not saying that. I think Notre Dame's probably a 9-2 football team with or without Jeremiah Love. They're a better football team with Jeremiah Love. But what is Vanderbilt without Diego Pavia?
Well, I mean, it's a very fair question, right? I mean, 34 total touchdowns here so far. And, you know, I mean, if they do go on the road and beat Tennessee, then, you know, and it's going to be because Diego Pavia had a really good game, right? That's just the way that it goes. I certainly think, you know, if he goes out there and, you know, 4-0 touchdown interception ratio or 4 total touchdowns or something like that, and they beat the Volunteers, yeah, he's very much in the discussion. And here's the thing, right? I always have this conversation when it comes to Major League Baseball. Jose Ramirez is the single most valuable player in Major League Baseball to his team, because the Guardians' offense would be even worse than it is without him. He is the single most important player to any team in Major League Baseball, but he will never win the MVP award because he's not going to hit 40-plus homers. You know, he's a guy that gets pitched around a lot, so he's not going to, you know, hit 300, anything like that. Nobody gets on base for him, so it's hard for him to get RBIs. But he's the most important player to his team. He's the most valuable player to his team. But somebody else is always going to win the award. So it kind of becomes a discussion of what is the Heisman Trophy, right? Is it the best player in the nation? Is it the best player to his team? And if so, how good does that team have to be, right? Typically, the benchmark is what, at least 10 wins, preferably a conference champion, you know, stuff like that. But to your point, right, Vanderbilt is probably a 6 or 7 win team at best without Diego Pavia. So in that respect, he probably is the single most valuable player in the country to his team. So if the voters take it in that context, then yeah, he deserves to win the award. But we'll have to see if the voters do take it into that context.
Yeah, last year it was kind of refreshing, right, where you had Hunter and Ashton Jeanty as 1-2. Now, no quarterback really jumped out when you think back to a year ago and what the quarterback situation was for the top teams in college football. I'm very curious how this plays out. I'm not saying that Diego Pavia plus 550 is worth a bet. And here's why. And not to get on my college football high horse, but it's just kind of stating the fact. And I know many people have pointed this out on different forums. The Heisman Trophy voting is a nightmare. There's too many people who vote. Not mm-hmm. enough people watch the sport. And I'm not saying that Diego Pavia should win the award, but I think we just had a pretty common sense conversation of, hey, what's the nature of this award? Is it the best player? Is it the most exciting player? Well, then maybe it's Jeremiah Love. Is it the most important player? Then maybe it should be Diego Pavia, especially if they go on the road and they beat Tennessee. But I don't trust the voters, and that's why I can't sit here and be like, hey, you should bet Diego Pavia plus 550. You should bet Jeremiah Love plus 350. And I know there are better numbers on them, a couple weeks ago. But to be honest, I think, you know, Love and Pavia should be much more in the discussion than they are. And, you know, maybe Diego Pavia, if they do in fact go down to Rocky Top and they get that win, he becomes in the discussion there. But, yeah, we will see how that ultimately plays out. All right, a lot still to get to. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to hit on the fired coach bump. It is back. We have some overreaction or market corrections to get to. We got spoiler rolls. We got crazy ass scenarios for conference championships. So we got a lot to get to. Adam's going to take some tea because the vocal cords are struggling a little bit. But we're going to take a quick break when we come back. A lot still on the other side. All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Alongside Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. And a special thanks to our sponsor all season long, Rainbow Authentics. It was great to hang out with Mike Kawazoe and all of the crew at a suite at Allegiant Stadium. Unfortunately, after an early touchdown, things went very, 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 very south for the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors in that one. But one final game on the island, we will preview that game on Wednesday, as we always do, and the Hawaii Bowl, more than likely, not official, but more than likely, the Rainbow Warriors will be back there. But thanks again to our good friends, Rainbow Authentics. Once again, check them out online, rainbowauthentics.com. They've got some new gear for the Tokyo Toe, their studly kicker, and a lot of other things over there. So check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. They've been helping out Hawaii athletics for quite some time. And if you want to do your part, check them out. And also, Adam, they have given us some T-shirts. So I'll put it up right here, the Chase Game T-shirts. I've got a handful of these. We're going to be giving these away to some of our loyal listeners. We got to figure out the proper way to give these away. So stay tuned next week. We'll probably have a little bit more details on how we'll be giving these away. We got a couple of hats, too, that we will be giving these away, too. So we got a whole lot going on from a giveaway standpoint. So thanks to the folks over at Rainbow Authentics, or as I should say, mahalo to our friends at Rainbow Authentics. And Adam, before we move on, what do we got going on over on the website?
Yeah, well, I didn't do tea. We're recording this at like 10:50. It was a hottie toddy instead. So, or a hot toddy, I guess I should say. So, you know, a little bourbon in the morning, never hurt anybody. honestly, I need it because over at VSiN.com, it's busy as hell right now, man. We got our Black Friday special, which is out, $60 through May 1st, all access pass to everything that we do, including those Opta AI player projections for the NFL and the NBA. So, you know, if you're into player props, if you're into betting those, you can check those out with a VSiN Pro subscription over there. So that Black Friday special is the best one that we do all year long. And, you know, College Football Playoff Betting Guide comes out December 11th. We'll have, obviously, a Super Bowl betting guide, March Madness betting guide. All those will be included if you get that Black Friday special, not to mention daily NBA, NHL. Golf will be back soon. I know golf takes a break after this week, but, man, it's busy. There's a lot going on. I don't know, man. That's why I got to shake this cold just to make sure I can stay on top of everything.
All right. A bunch to get to and a couple things I wanted to hit on here.
I want to hit on first.
Yeah, let's do it.
Before we get into stuff that, you know, is relevant to our show in terms of betting on college football and the playoff and betting odds and all of that, is the UAB stabbing incident the most absurd college football story of this year, or is there something that actually tops it?
And I don't want to dispel it because obviously it was very, very serious, but like it kind of just like flew under the radar. I bet UAB earlier in the week, for those who missed it, UAB football player stabbed two teammates on game day, hours before the team played South Florida. The two wounded players were in stable condition, according to Alex Mortensen. He added that the team decided to play to honor graduating seniors in their final home game, though several players understandably sat out due to the incident. The teammate suspected in the stabbing was in custody, according to the university. The school did not release the names of the players involved. Daniel Mincy, who was an offensive lineman who transferred to the school in May, was arrested and booked in charges of aggravated assault and attempted murder in the afternoon. For those who did not see that, that was a just crazy doesn't define it. I mean, I think, no. Game day, two players on UAB get stabbed by a teammate, and then the team went out and played the football game.
Yeah. Wild. I mean, and not surprisingly, right? I mean, and South Florida's a really good team, but like, I don't know how the hell you play after that. Like, I truly don't know how you're supposed to go out there and try to focus on football. I guess kudos to them for wanting to play for, you know, the graduating seniors in their final home game. But that one, like, I saw it, and it's a double take doesn't even do it justice. It's like a triple take where you're like, wait, does that really say what I think it says? When it came across social media on Saturday morning, wild, just absolutely wild, man.
Yeah, no easy transition off that, but I'll do my best, because Alex Mortensen, more than likely, I guess, I don't know. I mean, he might have a chance to keep the UAB job. I'm not really in tune with the search process down there at UAB, but we did get another firing, and pretty surprising in this regard. 2 weeks ago, Cal went on the road and beat Louisville as what, a 19 point underdog, something like that. And then they came back home. They were, I think, a 4 or 4.5 point favorite against Stanford. They were on the road, excuse me, for the game, and they lost 31-10. And, you know, I had heard that things in that coaching room were not great, that things were kind of all over the place. So I guess it's not that surprising that Justin Wilcox is fired. But Nick Rolovich, the former Hawaii coach, who I believe was just like a special assistant on this staff, he's going to take over on an interim basis. And the question now, as this also leads us into the ACC scenarios, do we get the fired coach bump? So we've talked about it a bunch here on the show. This will be the 12th team to play a game this season at Adam with a interim coach. The previous 11 are 7-4 ATS. They got off to a really hot start. There was a stretch of 6 straight covers, and then Colorado State failed to cover against Wyoming. Florida did cover against Georgia, thanks to the Gunnar Stockton kneel down at the 1. LSU failed to cover by a point against Bama, 20-9. And then the one that was probably the toughest to swallow, Auburn forced overtime against Vanderbilt, but ultimately lost by a touchdown. The closing number there was 6 or 6.5. So 7-4 ATS. Nick Rolovich, you know, his firing at Washington State was obviously a unique one. We don't have to relitigate the whole situation there, based off of COVID vaccine, protocols or whatever. But he's a good coach, man. And what he did at Hawaii, what he did at Washington State, I think there's a pretty good connection between him and Jaron Chiave Sangapulateli, as I can get to enjoy saying that at least for one more week. Does Cal have a chance to play spoiler to SMU here, 12.5 point dog with the fired coach bump?
I mean, maybe, right?
It is SMU. The ACC.
It's the ACC. But man, SMU, like, they just crushed Louisville. I mean, that was never a game this past week. I know Miller Moss didn't play, but I mean, they just hammered Louisville. And Rhett Lashley has been a guy that, he was sought after for a while there.
Sure.
It's hilarious that Rolovich, it was a mandate for, state employees, which he was a state employee as Washington State's head coach. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do this. And him and a few others wound up leaving the program. But yeah, I think he is a really, really good head coach. So that could be interesting. Also, Riverboat Ron Rivera is the GM of Cal's football team. So he's the one who announced the Wilcox departure. So that's a lot of interesting things going on here with both Cal and Stanford. But man, I think SMU's good. I think Brett Lashley really has this team where he wants them to be. They lost a ton of talent from last year's roster, particularly on the defensive side of the equation. Like, I think they're just a good team. So I want to believe in Cal with Rolovich. And again, like, who knows how the roster feels about this, but I don't know, man. I think it's tough to go up against a really good SMU team.
Yeah, I don't know if they can win the game outright, but, you know, college football's weird. The ACC is weird. As you mentioned, Georgia Tech, thanks for coming. You look at the scenarios for the ACC, it's pretty simple. If Virginia is a double-digit favorite, beats Virginia Tech, and SMU is a double-digit favorite, beats Cal, they're both in. If one of them were to lose, believe it or not, people, Duke is still alive. I don't know how, but Duke is still alive. If Cal were to pull the upset over SMU, I believe it would be Duke versus Virginia. If Virginia Tech were to pull the upset over Virginia, it would be SMU versus Duke, I believe. Miami needs, how about this? Miami needs both Cal and Virginia Tech to pull off the upset in order to get into the ACC championship. Oh, by the way, they have to go to Pitt and win. So that leads us to that game. Pitt pulls off the upset, very small upset, over Georgia Tech, even though Nard Dope tried to fake a punt down up two touchdowns in the fourth quarter like an absolute clown. But they get the win, and now you got Pitt versus Miami, and I had a buddy, and it's not the Bear. It's another buddy of mine who's a big Miami fan. He just texted me, and he goes, take Pitt plus seven. It is the lock of the century.
I mean, it'd be very Mario Cristobal, would it not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's supposed to be pretty chilly. It's the noon kick. Plenty of sevens still out there. I mean, look, Miami and that defensive line should absolutely wreak all sorts of havoc against Mason Heinschel. We mentioned the number for Notre Dame. Notre Dame on 41 dropbacks against Heinschel had 22 pressures. And Notre Dame's defensive line is good. It ain't as good as Miami's defensive line. So Miami should, and I emphasize, should dominate up front. But I don't know, man. The Nard Dope does find ways in these types of games to pull the rabbit out of a hat. So we'll see. Temps in the 40s could be a little bit chilly up there. So we'll see how that one plays out. But the ACC, it looks like it's kind of cleared up. As long as the two double-digit favorites take care of business. It would be perfect, though, for Virginia Tech to pull the stunner in Charlottesville and ruin the magical season for their in-state rival.
Well, I mean, it would be hilarious, right, with somebody coming in James Franklin who can't win a big game for Virginia Tech to win a big game, you know, as he's coming in to take over the program. But also, I mean, you look at the last three games for Virginia Tech here and, like, well, really the last six, just not a whole lot of offense for them. 23 points against Wake, 20 against Georgia Tech. Did have the weird game against Cal where they had 42, but 16 against Louisville, 14 against Florida State, 17 against Miami. Like, they're probably going to have to do better than 20 points to beat Virginia here, but covering the number, certainly a possibility. But, I mean, let me ask you this. So, whoever emerges from the ACC, are you just blindly fading them as kind of irresponsible to say? Because it obviously depends on the number. But, like, I would have a hard time envisioning a number where I want to back whoever the ACC team is in that first-round playoff game. Like, I just – whoever they get out of the SEC, or maybe it's, like, you know, something weird happens in Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Texas Tech would beat the hell out of any of them.
Oh, Virginia for sure. It would be kind of fun to get
Pitt too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Pitt doesn't have a chance. I think it's Miami could get in. Now Miami's different. Miami, if the massive two-leg money line parlay comes home of Virginia Tech and Cal. By the way, I'll say this. I think their odds to win the ACC are like plus 650. Go ahead and money line Cal to Virginia Tech and do that instead. That is a much better way to do it if you want to have Miami winning this conference. Yeah, you know, I said this to open the Wednesday pod, and I know the whole, I mean, anywhere you look right now, and that's why, to be honest, I love what we do. Because, yes, Miami-Notre Dame is a discussion, but how do we bet it? And that's where I'm kind of at when it comes to that. What I said to open up Wednesday, Adam, and I'll keep it abbreviated, was I'm kind of pissed off at Miami, and here's why. All you had to do was just lose one of those two games. Just lose to Louisville and beat SMU. Just lose to SMU and beat Louisville, and then all this nonsense is out of our hair, and arguably the best team in the ACC, Miami, goes to the damn playoff, but instead they lose both of those games because, of course, and now this is where we're at. And, you know, I get it. I know why the Bear, Chris Felica, and Bruce Feldman and plenty of other people are upset that Miami is behind Notre Dame. Notre Dame's looked like a playoff team. And you know who's looked like a playoff team recently? Miami. And we'll see what they do on Saturday afternoon. I don't know. Do they go scorched earth at them in this spot? And can they dominate Pitt? Or do they do a classic Cristobal and stub their toe on the road in the final week of the season like they did last year at Syracuse?
I mean, I'll say this. Whether or not they stub their toe and lose the game, I don't know. But I bet this one's really close for comfort in the fourth quarter. You know, I mean, that just kind of seems like it's going to be that way. And look, I mean, okay, they blew out Syracuse. Big deal. Everyone blows out Syracuse. NC State, I mean, I guess by the score, that's a nice win.
That was a dominant performance. Like watching that game, that was, I said it last week, I think that was their best performance of the year. Better than Notre Dame, better than USF. They, I think, outgained them by like 400 yards. Like that was pure domination against NC State.
Which is good, right? I mean, it's good to see that type of thing here late in the season. And you know, I mean, but that's the thing, right? Like Miami's had a couple of games here and there where they've done that. Notre Dame's basically done that every game since, you know, they started 0-2. So look, again, like you can only play the teams that are on the schedule. When these schedules get made, particularly the non-conference games, like they're made with the expectation that these teams will be pretty good. You know, that 3, 4, 5 years down the road, a team that's, you know, top 15 at the present when you schedule the game is going to be able to uphold that standard. Like, that's what you think is going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, like, you can't hold that against the team that goes out there and, you know, beats this lesser opponent, quote unquote, or whatever the case may be. Like, all you can do is play who's on your schedule. And if you're beating the piss out of teams that are much worse than you, good. That's what you're supposed to do. And I think that should be rewarded.
I've never seen a game in my life like I saw on Saturday in South Bend. Notre Dame led 21-0 before the offense got on the field. I've never seen it. I've never been watching football a long time, Adam. They got a pick six, then they blocked a punt, returned it for a touchdown, and then another pick six, and two offensive plays in to the game, they were up 28-0. I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
And I mean, well, look, I mean, we saw.
I think they broke Parker Fleming's "how bad did we get beat" graph.
Oh yeah, I think so too. But I mean, I'm not gonna say we should have saw this coming, but like we've been talking about ever since Steve Angeli went out how abominable the quarterback play has been for Syracuse. Like, you know, for all of the really good recruiting that Fran Brown allegedly did, and that was why they hired him, because he was such a good recruiter, kind of trying to go that Texas Tech blueprint of like, let's just get a closer as the head coach and try to get as much talent as possible, and then we'll see what we can do with it. Like, to have not done better at the quarterback position behind Angeli, who, of course, you know, was what, a graduate transfer? Like, I don't know. I don't know how that was such a big miss, but, I mean, it's like Mac-level quarterback, like bad Mac-level quarterback.
They have a walk-on lacrosse player as their starting quarterback. Like, it is... I did get a text from my buddy Tyler, who hosts the Locked On Notre Dame podcast, and he goes, should Steve Angeli win the Heisman Trophy?
That's fantastic.
All right. A couple other things before we get out of here, I had on my list here for us to hit on. I wanted to hit on this real quickly. The Mountain West will have no bearing on the college football playoff, but the conference has a chance to be really weird if New Mexico beats San Diego State on Friday. So the conference right now, San Diego State, if they win, they are into the conference championship with one conference loss to Hawaii. And if Boise beats Utah State, they're in as well because they have the head-to-head tiebreak over UNLV because they beat them head-to-head. But, Adam, if San Diego State loses to New Mexico, and I'll just put it out there, I will be betting New Mexico. I have actually already bet New Mexico. I really like the spot. They're at home. They've got offensive firepower, which, as you saw out on the island, tends to make things a little bit uncomfortable for San Diego State. There's a chance for a four-way tie in this conference where then we get into a tiebreaker of SP Plus, Sports Source, Strength of Record from ESPN, and KPI. Nothing better than to have four teams have the same record in conference play and have a four-way tiebreaker based off of four advanced metrics. But the Mountain West, if New Mexico wins and then chalk holds elsewhere, that's how it'll play out.
I mean, why not just show up in a Maverick gas station in some rural town, you know, in the Rockies or something like that, and just flip a coin, right? I mean, that's what they do in Texas when they did the Texas State playoffs, where they just flipped a coin in the parking lot of a gas station to see who would, you know, wind up going. I don't know if it was the championship game or whatever it was. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I like New Mexico in this spot as well. And honestly, I thought last week New Mexico and Air Force was one of the absolute worst lines of the entire season. We talked about it on the show here, and hopefully people were able to take advantage. Liam Zarco was really, really good for Air Force. Extremely good. The other guys at the quarterback position are all terrible. And they were quite terrible last week. New Mexico won 20-3, I think it was. Closed like 3.5-point favorite. I had it 10 after my adjustment to Zarco being out. And again, I think Air Force is worth fading this week, even though Colorado State's horrific. But like their quarterbacks, I think had I wrote it down somewhere. Like their quarterbacks right had here. Like 130 yards combined, like rushing and passing. Like terrible line. I also think New Mexico's pretty
yards
good
of
too.
Offense.
Yeah, I think New Mexico is a pretty good football team. Honestly, this is, you know, probably a discussion for another day, but is Jason Eck one and done there?
Well, I think he is not getting nearly enough credit for this year. He's 8-3.
That's a hard job, dude.
New Mexico hasn't been to
a hard job.
New Mexico hasn't been to a bowl in a decade. Like Bronco Mendenhall did a really good job a year ago, and they didn't get bowl eligible. They lost their regular season finale to Hawaii. Jason Eck had, I think, what, like 70 new players on the roster?
Yeah.
And I would say this, there's a lot of jobs out.
They might win 10 games.
They might. A lot of programs should take a look at Jason Eck. He's done an amazing job at New Mexico. I mean, think if you're UCLA, you got firsthand knowledge of him whooping your ass. Like,
yeah, it's true.
Just take him. You know, so I'd be curious to see if he is one and done. But New Mexico, definitely an underrated and under the radar team this year that is sitting there at 8-3 and a chance to win the conference championship.
Yeah. And look, you know, I mean, this is something that, you know, it doesn't really have betting application right now, but it obviously could going forward. You know, we talked at length about all the open coaching jobs very early on in the season here, and it's a pretty, you know, significant ones at that. But then we've had other coaches, like, we both thought it was a lock that Luke Fickell would be gone.
Yep.
Not going to be, right? There are some other guys that have gotten, you know, a vote of confidence here
Norvell.
For 2026. Yeah, Mike Norvell, another one. Did Mike Locksley get one too, I think,
yep.
at Maryland?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of paying these multi-million dollar buyouts, these programs are like, well, let's just invest in the talent on the roster. So I'm really curious to see what happens specifically with the futures markets as we go forward, right? Because let's say Wisconsin, instead of paying Luke Fickell whatever his buyout amount is, commits $15 to $20 million to the football program, right? They're going to have a very highly rated transfer portal class. Because, you know, you're going to get talent as long as you're showing up with a bag to get said talent. But is Luke Fickell a good head coach? I don't know. So we may have some teams in the futures market that are either wildly mispriced or super high variance because the talent level is better because they invested in the roster. But will the head coach be able to take those ingredients and make a Michelin star dish out of them? I don't know. So we got a lot of college football left for this season, obviously, but it's something that's already at the forefront of my mind, especially as somebody who does power ratings and makes their own numbers, of like how to evaluate some of these teams that invest in the roster instead of investing in the coaching spot and like how they get priced from a future standpoint, you know, as we go throughout the spring and summer next year.
All right, before we get out of here, and we'll talk about this on Wednesday when we make all our best bets, but teams who could play spoiler You know, we talked about Michigan a little bit already. Maybe that's not even a spoiler. I mean, they would have a playoff discussion if they were to win that game at home against Ohio State. We talked some Virginia Tech, Cal, Stanford technically. Yes, could very well play spoiler as a 33.5 point underdog. Washington, Oregon. I am very much looking forward to this game. Oregon, I'll give them a credit. You know, tip of the cap. You know, they were at home, but I think it was fair to ask the question, Adam, who have you beat? Right? Your best win was on the road at Iowa. And without DeCorian Moore, without Bryant, they were impressive to me. And, you know, USC goes right down the field. They score a touchdown. I was impressed by what I saw from Oregon. But now you got to do it again. And you got to go on the road, hated rival in Washington. And this is a Washington team that plays a lot better at home. Does Washington play the role of spoiler here as a touchdown underdog against Oregon?
Certainly a possibility, right? I mean, this Washington team is, they've been a little bit mystifying throughout the course of the season here, because from a metrics standpoint, they've on the whole been really, really good. But from a results standpoint, maybe not so much. And honestly, you think back to the game Ohio State played against Washington, like that was a game, you know, well past half where Ohio State was tested in that game. Now, Washington didn't do much on offense, which nobody's done much on offense against the Buckeyes, but their defense played very admirably in that game. And that's when Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith were actually healthy, as opposed to what they've been here of late. So that was a thoroughly impressive 24-6 loss for Washington. It's hard to say that about an 18-point game, but I was really impressed in watching that game. As far as this week goes, I do have Oregon as a 9-point favorite. So my power ratings would suggest that maybe there's a little bit of value on the Ducks, but I want no part of it, man. And this is something else that we've discussed in past episodes, and I think deserves to be brought up again. And especially if they get into the college football playoff, Dan Lanning in big games, right? The jury is still out. We don't know. And this is a pretty big game. So I'm curious, because I think Jed Fish has done an excellent job with the Huskies. Lanning gets a ton of talent and they run a great offensive scheme. But man, when he gets tested and plays against a team that's on his level, or, you know, maybe a little bit better, he struggles. How close to his level is Washington? I think we'll find that out pretty quickly.
There's been some smoke, not a ton, not like Lane Kiffin, about Jed Fish to Florida. He went to Florida. Coached at UCLA. Could he go to UCLA? That wouldn't make sense to me to go from Washington to UCLA. But to go to Florida, if he wants to go back to his alma mater, certainly. But I like Washington. I think BetMGM still has 7. I'm on Washington here. I took the points. I think this is going to be a great game. This is one of the games I'm very much looking forward to this upcoming weekend. A lot of 5-win teams going for bowl eligibility. One game I wanted just to point off a little bit off the radar, because that's what we do here on this show. I was on UTSA last week. They needed the win to get the bowl eligibility. Jeff Traylor at home is now 33-4 straight up since 2020. UTSA is an absolute machine, but Army will not make a bowl game if they don't win on Saturday. Army right now a touchdown underdog against the Roadrunners. UTSA, I don't want to say they're fat and happy, but you do wonder a little bit, Adam. All right, we beat the living crap out of East Carolina. Now we have to play the triple option. Like, how up for this game is UTSA going to be? Because there's nothing else out there for UTSA. They are bowl eligible. They cannot win the American. And you've got an Army team that's coming down, and you know they're just going to kind of keep coming and coming and coming. And just remember this, they're 5-5. Army loses last week. I don't know how the hell Army lost last week. They blew a double-digit lead. And I actually got a text, Adam, because I was not paying attention to Tulsa Army, because a bunch of people, including Wes Reynolds and Todd Furman, came on this podcast and said under 7.5 wins for the season win total for Army. And I just thought I'd have to wait until the Navy game. Well, lo and behold, Tulsa scores 12 in the fourth quarter to beat the Black Knights. So I'm going to take the 7, and this is going to be a horrifying game, because last week, one of my main handicaps was Jeff Traylor at home, UTSA. I'd be curious where they're at for this game, knowing that they really have nothing else to play for since they've already locked up bowl eligibility.
Yeah, it's a really fair question, right? Especially against an Army team that you know is going to be disciplined, you know is always focused. They're just not very talented this year.
No.
I mean, they really badly miss Bryson Daly. And, you know, I mean, look, Army beat UTSA last year, 29-24. So I guess you could call it a revenge game for the Roadrunners if they care about such things. But, you know, these are always such interesting games to me when an option team faces a, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say UTSA is really pass heavy because they've got almost 2,000 rushing yards, over 5 yards per carry. But it does seem like when they're really going well, their quarterback's going well. And it's Owen McCown here who, you know, I thought coming back as one of the few returners in this conference because, you know, Memphis lost Seth Hennigan. Tulane, of course, you know, had lost Darian Mensah. Of course, then they got Jake Retzlaff real late. Drew Mestemaker at North Texas had played one game at quarterback since like eighth grade. You know, I was like, oh, UTSA is going to be pretty good this year with McCown coming back. They have been the most ridiculous team this season. I mean, you know, they kind of hung with Texas A&M a little bit, lost by 18, lost to Texas State, who's having a down year. They barely beat Colorado State on the road, who's awful. They went to Temple and lost. Then they beat Rice 61-13. And they lost 55-17 the next week. Like, I have no idea what UTSA is. I truly don't know. So I can't play on or against them, but more power to you, man. I'll be rooting for you with that Army play.
Well, how about this though? This is fun. If you look at his home games in conference play, Owen McCown, UTSA put up 61 on Rice, like you mentioned, 3 touchdown passes, 48 on Tulane, 4 touchdown passes, and then East Carolina, 58, and he threw for 5 touchdown passes. Owen McCown, loves him some home cooking, apparently, and going up against Army, that probably won't be a super fun endeavor, but when do I bet on teams that make me enjoy my life?
Maybe he's just a dome quarterback, right?
Maybe.
UTSA playing at the Alamo Dome? Maybe he's got to be inside. You know, something to keep in mind, I guess, for whatever bowl game they make. But by the way, Army, one of 21 teams with 5 wins that can get bowl eligible. Delaware has 5 wins, but unfortunately they can't be bowl eligible because of the asinine transition period rule of college football. But 21 teams can become bowl eligible this week. 6 of them are playing each other. Penn State, Rutgers, Georgia Southern, Marshall, Arkansas State, and App State. So, I will just throw out this cautionary tale here before we look at, you know, some market correction and overreaction stuff. If you're 5-6, you're not very good. So make sure that you're not paying a premium on these teams just because they're in a must-win situation.
Before we get to the market correction and get out of here, I think James Madison's in trouble. I bet them 2 weeks ago to make the playoff. The rankings really didn't work out in their favor. And we talked about the spot this weekend, against Washington State, where I thought, hey, they're going to try to prove a point. They're going to dominate Wazoo coming off this weird travel. And they were fortunate to win that game. Couple that with Louisville losing in the fashion that they did. That's their lone loss. So their loss looks worse. And I think the committee showed their hand. And if North Texas and Tulane take care of business this weekend, and they both are massive favorites to do so, I would be very surprised if James Madison ultimately is the selection for the G5. So I felt like this weekend, starting last Tuesday, Adam, was a big loss for James Madison. And I think this weekend kind of hammered it back home that it will be the American that gets into the college football playoff.
Let me mention real quick here, too, about that James Madison game. So they play Coastal Carolina this week. I'm sure everyone pays very close attention to Coastal Carolina's depth chart. But quarterback Samari Collier is out. He's done for the season here with the injury that he suffered. And, you know, I mean, he's only completed 48.7% of his passes, but somehow has a 7-2 touchdown interception ratio and over 6 yards a carry. So their offense really took off when he took over. And honestly, he probably saved Tim Beck's job because I thought he was trending towards being let go here based on what was going to happen the rest of the season. But with Samari Collier out, like, That line is way high for me at 22.5 compared to my power rating. I don't know how many points Collier's worth to the number, but it seems like it's quite a bit based on this one's about a touchdown off of my number. So just something for you to keep in mind there, that if you're looking at Coastal Carolina and you're like, hey, this team's 5-2 in conference play, like, you know, they put up some points at times, they're starting quarterbacks out. And it can be hard to find injury information, but that's one. So keep that in mind.
All right, let's hit these quickly before we get out of here. We've been going for a long time. Fun fact, Adam said, let's go shorter today because his voice has been struggling, and this is probably going to be like our longest podcast we've ever done.
The only thing that went shorter was you on screen. Like, Wyatt gave me a bunch of shit about I was like getting too short throughout the course of the episode, and Mr. 6'7", or whatever you are, I've been taller than you on camera the whole time.
I know, I need to get taller here. All right, Ohio State, Michigan. We talked about this briefly. Look ahead, 12.5. Number down to 10. Adam, mark a correction over reaction.
I think this is about right. My number's 10. And again, with Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith being banged up, and, you know, I mean, Michigan, they're playing pretty well, right? I mean, Bryce Underwood's numbers don't really jump out, normally staying off the page, but Michigan's playing well. Ohio State hasn't beat them in, what, 6 years? Because they didn't play in 2020, so, or whatever it was. I don't know.
Six or
but
seven.
But the number's right. The number's right.
LSU, Oklahoma. LSU, boy, what a performance by the Bayou Bengals. Barely beating Western Kentucky in a game that it seemed like Western Kentucky had nothing to play for. And Oklahoma, they did it again. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I should have bet the under as opposed to taking the points with Missouri. Closing line value, yippee, on Mizzou. Outgained again, Oklahoma, but that defense is a juggernaut, man. And you got the Van Buren boys starting. Let me get my eight fingers up. 8.5 to 10 here, LSU at Oklahoma.
I don't really love Oklahoma. And I've talked about it a lot, where John Mateer has just not played well. His numbers have not been strong since coming back from the injury. And I have this game lined at 15. So I'm well above the market here. I mean, I'm so far out on LSU. Like, I can't even see them. So for Oklahoma, right? I mean, you talk about, you know, teams with a potential to play spoiler. If Oklahoma wins, do they have to win convincingly to be a playoff team?
No, I think they just have to win.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they are.
Does LSU show up, do you think?
I don't know. I kind of want to bet LSU.
Do they find out Saturday morning that Lane Kiffin's their next head coach?
Yeah. Is Lane Kiffin going to coach? Can he coach Friday at Ole Miss and then Saturday against Oklahoma? Another move from the look ahead to now, two more SEC games. Speaking of Lane Kiffin, 9.5 last week down to 7. Is this an overreaction to the news that Lane Kiffin could be 1 foot out the door?
I'll tell you what, I have this number 6.5. So I don't think so. And this is something I mentioned before about Mississippi. We've seen this play out a couple of different times, including the game against LSU. They love to badly outgain teams and win by like 7 to 11 points. They're just not a super reliable, you know, team that you want to lay pretty big numbers with, especially here in a rivalry game where things are super weird. That being said, I'm not taking Mississippi State, but I have it 6.5. So it's moved towards my number, and that is something I'm pretty happy about.
Vanderbilt, Tennessee. We talked about this game. We got one more chance to bet on Diego Pavia as an underdog. There are a couple 2.5s out there. We'll call it 3. For this purpose, 5.5 was the look ahead. Vandy, very impressive against Kentucky. I thought that would be a bit of a weird spot. It was not. They were dominant. And now you've got a in-state showdown. Vandy, I think Diego Pavia earlier this year on a podcast said, like, they are the team of Tennessee or something like that. This game's going to be fun, man. Is this too much of a move, though? 5.5 down to 3.
I have Tennessee a half point favorite. So okay. I think this one's pretty accurate. And man, you know, this is the tough thing about this time of the year, right? Tennessee, they scored 31 points in the first half against Florida last week. and then do absolutely nothing in the second half. But Florida had no interest in being there at all whatsoever. Like, it's kind of tough to read into what some of these final scores and performances mean at this time of the year. And I think the fact that we saw this line move down off of the two performances from both teams kind of leads me to believe nobody really cared about what Tennessee did against Florida, whereas Vanderbilt was very impressive. I think this is a market correction. I think this is the right move.
All right. I think that's really most notable here. Kentucky-Louisville, big move here. This one, I don't know if anyone wants to touch this game, but Kentucky was a 6.5-point favorite in the look-ahead. Both these teams got their ass kicked, and the number's down to 3.
I have Kentucky minus 1, so definitely moving in the right direction. But again, like, I don't know who's playing quarterback for Louisville. I don't think Miller Moss will play. They'll just kind of, you know, move forward and plan for next year. So I don't really know how to quantify that because he's been underwhelming anyway. But also Kentucky, like, Carter Bowley played okay since he took over. He's certainly better than Zach Calzada was. But I still don't think that's a very good Wildcats team.
All right. I think that's going to do it. We've been going for a while. And Adam, once again, told me that we're going to keep it brief. So that,
of course,
is why we went 70 minutes today. Final thoughts here, Adam, on week 14. You believe that Hook'em Horns is going to take care of business on Friday.
Yeah, I think so. Also, Tuesday, a very, very bittersweet day because we get 2 Maction games and then we will put Maction away until next year. But also, Wednesday would be our first day without a football game in, what is it, 59 days? Something like that. So bittersweet there for sure.
Yep, no doubt. And Navy Memphis, Thanksgiving. Tempted to take the midshipman here, but haven't gotten to the window yet on that one. All right, that's going to do it for our podcast. Just a reminder, no pod on Tuesday. I'll be traveling, but I will be joined by Wes and Matt. Not sure for how long. Probably not 70 minutes because I made Adam go extended today. But we will have a podcast for you on Wednesday. Thanks to all of you. And once again, please rate, review, and subscribe. Check out our YouTube page. Let's keep building those numbers. YouTube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. For Adam, I'm Tim. Thanks to Ryan and Wyatt, our producers. We'll be back on Wednesday right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.